My talk will also be about multi-user detection, but this case in frequency selective fading channels. What does this mean? It means that your channel is actually changing in the frequency domain within your transmission bandwidth. And it's actually caused by multiple reflections in the environment, but I will come to that later on. So the outline of the talk, first I will give a small introduction. Then I will introduce a data model for direct sequence codivision multiple access systems, since those are the systems we will be focusing on in this multi-user detection context. And then I will show you some receiver structures for the case that we have frequency selective fading. I will tell you something about the rake receiver, then extension to space-time rake receiver if you have multiple receiver antennas. Then a multi-user receiver based on this rake structure, and then a general multi-user receiver. And if time permits, I will also tell you something about block spreading for CDMA systems. In this talk, we will mainly focus on the linear receiver structures with finite length. And we will also consider blind receivers, so they don't need any training sequence. And we only consider blind receivers, not the double blind receivers, so we assume that the code of the desired user is known. So we try to estimate the data sequence or the channel only from the outputs and the codes of the desired user. As you all know, there exist different multiple access schemes. You have frequency division multiple access, where every user is assigned a different frequency band. You have TDMA time division multiple access, where every user has a different time slot. And then you also have codivision multiple access, where you will spread every user over the total available time and frequency spectrum based on some kind of code. And in the case of direct sequence CDMA, your data signal will simply be multiplied by some kind of wideband code signal, and you get a coded data signal at a higher rate. So in this talk, we will, like I already told you, focus on direct sequence CDMA, but many ideas can be used for other multiple access schemes as well. So let me introduce then the data model for direct sequence codivision multiple access systems, and I will do that by means of this picture here. So assume we have capital J users, and one of these users wants to transmit this data symbol sequence, for instance, these bits, right? And the first thing we will do is we will spread this data sequence as JFK with this code sequence here, CJFN. And we assume that it has some spreading factor N, so that's the number of code symbols per data symbol period, which is 3 here in this case. And we have a certain code length, which is rho times the spreading factor, for instance. Now, how will we spread this sequence here with this code? We will just periodically repeat this code here, and we will group N successive code symbols into one vector, and then we just multiply each data symbol here with each vector here, and we get a high rate sequence which we will transmit. And this sequence XJ of N is called the chip sequence. So every user will try to transmit this chip sequence. Let me remark that when the code length is equal to the spreading factor, in that case people talk about the short code or a periodic code. In that case, every data symbol here will be spread by the same code symbol, code factor. In the case rho is larger than 1, in that case we have a long code or an aperiodic code. It's still periodic, but the period is larger than the symbol period. Okay, so every user wants to transmit his chip sequence at the highest possible rate, of course. And to do that, you, of course, need bandwidth. And when you have a very large transmission bandwidth, the chances is quite high that you will get frequency variations of your channel within that transmission bandwidth. So in that case, you have frequency selective fading. And this actually means that you will have interferences between the successive chips you will transmit for one user. And that's what we call inter-chip interference. And it's no longer negligible if you have quite high rate CDMA systems. In the previous talk, Professor Verdu assumed that every channel is just one pulse, so that we have not very high rate channels, and that we don't have a frequency selective fading. So here we include the problem of inter-chip interference reduction as well. So assume that we have M receiver antennas, for instance, that will be sampled at the chip rate. So we will look at a digital model for this. Then we get an M-dimensional output vector sequence, one entry for every antenna. And you can model it like this. So for every user, you have the convolution of the user's chip sequence with an N-dimensional vector channel. So each entry is the channel corresponding to that particular antenna. And we assume that this vector channel is a fit vector filter, for instance, with a certain order that is larger than zero, since we assume that there's interference between successive chips, and with a certain delay index as well. We will assume that the noise is zero mean, white noise. In the case that you have a single receiver antenna, of course, all these vectors are simply scalars, right? We will also consider uplink communication, so from the mobiles to the base station. This means that all users will have different channels, and that we generally have asynchronous communication, so the users will transmit in an asynchronous fashion. If you want synchronous communication in the uplink, you need a special protocol such that all users know when they have to transmit their chip sequence. Okay, now for this model, we will now look at some different kinds of receiver structures. And the first structure is the rake receiver. It's the most simple structure. So the rake receiver is based on a single receiver antenna. So M, the number of antennas, is equal to 1. And what is now a rake receiver, for instance, for a user J? Well, it's nothing else than a bank of LJ plus 1 correlators. So we will have one correlator or one matched filter for every channel tap. And in total, we have LJ plus 1 correlators. And this matched filter tries to extract all the energy within one channel tap for that user. And it tries to suppress all the other interferences from the user itself, because there's inter-chip interference, but also from interferences from the other users. Of course, it's just a matched filter, so it will not be optimal, and it cannot optimally remove all those interferences. And then you get those problems of near-far, of the near-far problem, for instance, because of that non-optimality. But anyway, so the rake receiver for user J is a bank of LJ plus 1 correlators. So for every channel tap, you match actually a correlator. And then, so for instance, if you look at the channel tap at position L, you will make the product of the code for that user, the code vector for that user, with here an n-dimensional vector with n equal to the spreading factor. And this vector is nothing else than a stacking of n successive received symbols with a certain offset. And this offset then determines on which channel tap you will match your correlator to. And then you just combine all these results together to get some estimate for your data symbol sequence. So in this rake receiver, for this structure, you only need the codes and the timing of the desired user. And this is also important that you can only allow for timing ambiguity within a fraction of the chip period. So here's a picture for this rake receiver. So this is only for one user. You consider LJ plus 1 delay, so the number of delays equal to the number of taps. And then for each branch here, you consider a correlator, and you combine all these results together. That's the idea of the rake receiver. So when you don't have frequency selective fading, you just have one branch here. That's then the classical matched filter. Now you can extend this rake receiver concept to include multiple receiver antennas. And in that case, we will talk about a space-time rake receiver. So in that case, if you look at the space-time rake receiver for user J, for instance, you will have a bank of LJ plus 1 correlators again, but now one bank for every antenna. And again, you combine all the results together by some kind of space-time combiner. So it's a simple extension of the classical rake receiver. Again, only code and timing of the desired user required, and you need quite accurate timing information. Now here, this space-time rake receiver, we modeled it here by first considering a bank of correlators and then a space-time combiner. But you can switch both things. You can say I first do some kind of space-time equalization, and then I do the correlation. So it's actually the same receiver structure, but it's just another model for it. And that space-time equalizer will then be some kind of vector, n-dimensional vector filter that will work on your n-dimensional received vector sequence, one entry for every antenna. And that's what we have here. So if we look at the space-time rake receiver now, for instance, for user one, and we look at it as in this new context, we first have a space-time equalizer for that user. So we will just apply an n-dimensional vector filter on my n-dimensional received vector sequence, and we get an estimate of our chip sequence, and then we perform a correlation, right? So, and it's again, so only codes and timing of the desired user required and accurate timing information necessary. And here's a picture of this model. So we have the different receiver antennas. We sample them at the chip rate. We multiplex the outputs together to get an n-dimensional received vector sequence. Then we apply our space-time equalizer. We get an estimate of the chip sequence, and we do the correlation. Now the question, of course, is what should this space-time equalizer be? What is the best space-time equalizer, for instance, you could use? You see that's a linear equalizer, and it's followed by some correlator. But since you only know the code of the desired user, this space-time equalizer actually should try to remove all the interferences as well as possible. Since you don't know the other codes, the best thing you can do is just to remove all possible interferences here, and then you hope that the correlator will remove any residual interferences. So this space-time equalizer can also be used in the case of time division multiplexes, for instance, where you don't have spreading, and where you just try to remove different code channel users within one slot. Okay, different kinds of space-time equalizers are presented in the next slide. So for instance, we could use the matched filter equalizer. So it will be matched to the codes as well as to, it will only be matched to the channel in that case. And it will maximize the signal to noise ratio. So only the signal to noise and not the interferences in the noise. And in that case, so the receiver will be optimal if the noise is Gaussian and you have a single user transmitting a single data symbol, because this matched filter equalizer is followed by a correlator, which is also a matched filter. So the total receiver is actually a matched filter. Then another thing you can do is you can, for instance, apply a zero forcing equalizer. So in that case, you will try to remove all the interferences, so from the user itself as well as from the other users. But in order to do that, you need actually a number of antennas which is larger than the number of users, which is generally not the case in the CDMA context. So that's not really a good choice. You then have something in between. So you have space-time equalizers that will try to maximize the signal to interference plus noise ratio. So now you also consider the inter-chip interference and the multi-user interferences. And you have some papers describing the maximal signal to interference plus noise ratio equalizer. This is just an equalizer that will maximize this ratio, but it is unknown up to a complex scaling. And to fix that scaling, for instance, you can take a look at the minimum mean squared error equalizer or the minimum variance distortionless receiver equalizer. So the the MMSE equalizer will minimize the mean squared error between the estimated chip sequence and the real chip sequence, while the MVDR equalizer will minimize the output energy under some constraint, and the constraint will be nothing else than fixing the useful energy for one specific delay. But both receivers actually maximize the signal to interference plus noise ratio. Okay, then based on this space-time wake receiver, people have also been looking into blind techniques to be used there, since blind receivers are quite important, as we heard in the first talk. So within this context of the space-time wake receiver, we can do, for instance, a blind channel estimation. So we will try to estimate the vector channel for a certain user, for instance. And there are techniques for frequency flat channels as well as extensions to frequency selective channels. All these techniques are principal component analysis techniques, so based on second order statistics. Again, only code of the desired user is required, and the channel will be known up to a phase shift. But the problem there is that if you want to implement now a space-time equalizer in an analytic way based on these channel estimates, if you don't consider the matched filter equalizer, you actually need the channels of all the users to build such a space-time equalizer. It means that you have to run this algorithm here for every user. And in that way, you actually also need the codes of all users to build a space-time equalizer for one specific user. And that's why people have been looking into direct blind equalizer estimation, where you actually directly estimate your equalizer without having to estimate the channel, and only based on the code of the desired user. And you have some techniques for blind maximal signal to interference plus noise ratio equalizer estimation. In that case, of course, the MMSC and MVDR equalizer also are only known up to a complex scaling, but you have also techniques where you can directly estimate the MMSC or MVDR equalizers. And here's also a technique where you can directly estimate a blind MMSC equalizer. Okay, so all these techniques here, as you can see, are based on second order statistics. And those techniques are not really reliable in the case you have fast fading channels, because since it is based on statistics, they need quite a large amount of data. And it is assumed that within the period that you gather that data, that your environment is stable, it's not varying in time. Now, when that is the case, when you have fast fading channels that are highly time varying, then those statistic-based methods are not really reliable, and you have to go to deterministic methods that give you exact results in the absence of noise. And they generally they can generally be performed on smaller amounts of data. And we will now present two methods to do deterministic, to build those deterministic blind receivers. So, the first thing we will do is we will make a collection of WN successive received vectors into one matrix. And let me show you how such a vector looks like. So it's actually the vector on which a space-time equalizer will be working on. So if you have a space-time equalizer of order Q, for instance, you will have a stack of Q plus 1 successive received vectors where your equalizer will be working on. And now you are going to collect W times N such vectors into one matrix. Why W times N? So W is actually the window length, the number of data symbol periods we are going to consider. And since this model is chips-based, we have to collect W times N such vectors. And then we get this matrix model here, where this is an input matrix of chips for every user, and here we have the channel matrix for every user. And this input matrix is also a collection of W times N input vectors. And we assume here that the total channel has full column rank and that the total input matrix has full row rank. Then we take a look at the first method. So the thing we are going to do now is, based on this output matrix, we are going to try to estimate the data symbols that are hidden in these chip sequences, actually, based only on the output matrix and the code of the user of interest. So in the first method, we will apply a zero forcing equalizer, which is unknown for the moment, to this output matrix, and we will then get one row out of the input matrix, which is our desired row. But this row still contains code information. It's a row of chips. So we can write it as a row of data symbols times some kind of code matrix. And now the unknowns in this equation here are the data symbols, of course, and the zero forcing equalizer. And you can put them together into this equation here. And it can be shown that under certain conditions for the codes and for the window length W, this here has a unique solution for the data symbols, not necessarily for the equalizer, since a zero forcing equalizer is not necessarily unique, but anyway, any zero forcing equalizer is okay. But it has a unique solution for the data symbols, and that's what's important. And in the noisy case, you will of course solve this equation in the least square sense, for instance, based on some kind of constraint. And you can solve it for the space-time equalizer. And in that case, you have a blind deterministic equalizer estimation technique, or you can solve it for the data symbols, and then you have a direct symbol estimation technique that works blindly. And we have developed in our department some interesting adaptive solutions for this direct blind symbol estimation. But I'm not going into details about that. Okay, the second method is then subspace-based, so you can also perform a singular value decomposition of this output matrix, yeah, where you can split your right singular vectors into a single subspace and a noise subspace. And this noise subspace is the space that is orthogonal to this output matrix. But we know, because of the rank condition we mentioned earlier, that the total input matrix is orthogonal to this noise subspace. And so also the desired row from that input matrix will be orthogonal to the noise subspace. And again, this is a row of different chips, and we can write it as a row of data symbols times the coding matrix. And again, under certain conditions, this has a unique solution for the data symbols, and you can again, in the noisy case, solve it in the least square sense under some constraints. And then you can again apply those adaptive solutions I was talking about. Okay, now those two methods, for those two methods, you see that you only need the code of the desired user. So both methods are deterministic as well, so they can be applied on quite short data bursts. And you can find adaptive implementations for those algorithms. Now, both methods can also be extended to combine more delays. So we saw that we, in the previous slides, we extracted only one row from the input matrix, but you can also consider equalizers that will focus on other rows of that input matrix, and you can combine those results. And so both methods can be extended for that, and they can also be extended to include some additional temporal oversampling, for which you will introduce an additional short code spreading, in order not to come in conflict with the Nyquist criterion. Also interesting is that for real alphabets, for instance BPSK, the previous equations can be split in their real and imaginary parts, and the number of unknowns remain the same, since they are real, the data symbols are real. So in that case, we can even perform a source separation without doing a spreading. We only have to perform some complex multiplicative coding, so there will be no increase in bandwidth. Okay, then I think I will now go to the multi-user receiver. So these the techniques I discussed so far were all space-time rake receivers. So we first did some kind of space-time equalization, and then we performed the correlation. But of course, it's more optimal to combine everything and to say, well, I just look for the optimal filter. And that's what we actually do in the multi-user receiver. Now, first there are some slides about the multi-user receiver based on the rake structure. So there you are going to apply a bank of correlators again, like in the rake receiver, but you're now going to consider the correlator outputs for all users to estimate only the information from one user. So in the classical rake receiver, you only use the correlator outputs for the desired user to estimate the user. But in the multi-user receiver, you are going to use all the correlator outputs to estimate only one user. But we will go to a more general form of the multi-user receiver. So which is not based actually on a rake structure. So what we're going to do here is remember that we had an n-dimensional received output vector sequence, so one entry for every antenna. And now we are going to stack n successive received n-dimensional vectors together into one n times n dimensional vector. So now we are going to consider the case that we actually have a diversity of n times m. So we consider this as our new output vector. And it can be written, if we use a short code spreading, it can be written like this. So for every user, we now have a convolution of the data symbol sequence with some kind of n times m dimensional composite channel vector. So previously in the space-time rake receiver, we had here the chip sequence, and here we had the n-dimensional channel vector. So now we have the data symbol sequence and an n times n-dimensional channel vector. So it's as if our diversity is increased with a factor of n, and that will be very important. So what we are going to do in this multi-user receiver ID, we're just going to apply an n times n-dimensional vector filter on this n times n dimensional received vector sequence. So for instance, how does this multi-user equalizer then for user one, for instance, looks like? So here you have your n times n dimensional vector filter, which is your multi-user equalizer, that you apply on your n times n dimensional vector sequence, and you immediately get an estimate of your data symbol. So in this, only looking at the structure, you see that you only actually need the timing of the desired user, and that there's a timing ambiguity here. So you can allow a timing ambiguity within a fraction of the data symbol period. So previously we saw that we needed quite accurate timing information because we had the chip period here. So here you can allow a more less accurate timing information. And what does the multi-user receiver then looks like? So we have M receiver antennas, yeah, and they are all sampled at the chip rate. They are multiplexed together. You have so actually one received n-dimensional vector sequence. Then you will stack n successive of those vectors together, so you get actually an n times n-dimensional received vector sequence, and then you apply your multi-user equalizer in order to get a data symbol estimate. So it seems as if you need less information, but of course to really design a multi-user equalizer, that's more complex than designing a space-time equalizer. Okay, let us take a look then at, again, different types of multi-user equalizers. So again, we can consider, for instance, the zero-forcing equalizer, which tries to remove all the interferences from the user itself as well as from all the other users. And now we have here a condition that is much better. So we see that the product of the number of antennas times the spreading factor should be larger than the number of users. So this can better be satisfied in practical CDMA systems. Then you can also consider equalizers that maximize the signal to interference plus noise ratio again. So you have the MMSE equalizer. Now it is going to minimize the mean squared error between the estimated data symbol sequence and the real data symbol sequence. or the MVDR equalizer, where you again going to minimize the real output energy of your equalizer subject to a constraint where you fix your useful energy. Again, for this type of multi-user receiver, there exists different blind techniques. So we have some blind channel estimations, techniques for this type of multi-user receiver. Well known is the subspace technique, which can be interpreted as a deterministic technique as well as a technique based on second order statistics. Only the code of the desired user is required there, and the channel will be known up to a complex scaling factor. Now, interesting here is that you can, with the subspace technique, you can construct the zero forcing and the minimum variance distortionless receiver equalizer only based on the channel of the user of interest. Previously, with the space-time equalizer, we saw that in order to build a space-time equalizer for a specific user, we actually needed all the channel information. Now, an interesting byproduct here is that we can construct it by using only the channel of the desired user. There are also linear prediction techniques for the blind channel estimation, and they are less sensitive to channel order of overestimation and those things. Then again, we have some direct blind equalizer estimations techniques where we directly estimate the equalizer in a blind fashion. You have the constrained minimum output energy equalizer proposed by Tsatsanis. And well, when you're, so you again minimize your output energy with based on some constraint. And when your constraint really fixes the useful energy, you again have the minimum variance distortionless receiver. But in order to fix your useful energy, you need your channel. So when you don't need your channel, you can, for instance, try to optimize the constraints. And in that case, you get a receiver that asymptotically leads to maximal signal to interference plus noise ratio. But it's not so good as the real MVDR equalizer. And then you have also a technique proposed by Jesper. So it's where you can directly estimate the MMSE equalizer in a blind fashion. It's also a subspace technique, and it can be combined with ideas of the deterministic mutually referenced equalizer approach also proposed by Jesper. And then finally, a lost structure, a lost blind equalizer estimation technique tries to find again a kind of a rake receiver, a general rake receiver, where now you don't have different correlators, but you have optimal filters that will try to extract the useful energy from one tap, reducing all the other interferences. So we saw that the correlator couldn't do that in an optimal way. Well, here you can look for other filters that can do it in an optimal way, and you can even implement those filters in a blind fashion. And that is presented by Wang and Poor, that kind of implementation of the multi-user equalizer. So I think this concludes the overview of the different kind of receivers you can use in such a direct sequence code division multiple access system. And well, I don't have time to go into the block spreading for synchronous CDMA systems, but let me just tell you that it is actually a technique where we try to remove all the multi-user interference without having to know the channel. So we can do that based on the use of some special codes and on a very simple rake receiver. And the idea is that block spreading will give you a channel that only has two taps. Because you look at not at symbols but at blocks, you can say that you only have a channel with order one. And that's why you can implement a kind of block rake receiver with only two branches. And when you design special codes, you can make sure that those branches remove all the multi-user interference. And then you actually split your multi-user data model into different single-user data models without having to know the channel, so only based on the code information. And then, of course, those single user data models are much easier to handle. You can do channel estimation there or whatever you want to do. So that basically concludes my talk.